This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 25th, episode 1112, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done. The downhill stretch has finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
So when I read that it was February 25th, most people probably said, oh, thank God February is almost over. It's almost over. And me, I would like to freeze February because coming up, our part of the world's most favorite, our country's favorite thing is the daylight savings. The time change happens. I think in just 2 weeks, Glenn. It's really,
really?
Not fair. It's not long enough. I need that. You know what? We don't do time change in Arizona, so that means I have to start this show at 6 as opposed to 7, and I am not as awake, and I'm kind of grumpy, and I need a nap right afterwards. And I would like to vote that we make the show later. I don't know.
You know, I just looked it up. It is March 8th. You're right. It is only a couple of weeks away. I didn't realize it was that soon. That seems soon.
It's not an even fair trade. Okay, there's no fair trade in this whole thing because it's just a couple months that we do the time change this way. So it's a couple months a year I get to sleep. Now, the other thing is February has been absolutely amazing in Phoenix, and I know that the rest of the country cannot wait to get out of February. Oh my gosh, what a horrible winter the rest of the country is having. I feel so bad for you guys, but you should move.
No, in Texas yesterday.
I know. It's crazy. I can't believe the amount of stuff that's gone on for these poor people in the rest of the country. You guys, I'm telling you, you need to follow the old people. Wherever the old people go is where we should all go. The old people go to Florida and Phoenix in the winter, okay? They have learned. They have years of experience. They are on to something, and we should just glean more information from them and follow them around.
You know, I thought about that, and after we went to town yesterday and had to fight with all the old people to go to the store, to go to lunch, to do everything we were trying to do, I changed my mind. Let's talk about the virtues and how wonderful the weather is year-round in California. California is the most beautiful place. The weather is always 60 to 80 degrees. It's never hot. It's never cold. It very seldom ever rains. It's just beautiful. You've got all those stars out there. It's wonderful. Now, you know, we won't mention the taxes and all that stuff, but it's just a beautiful place to live. I highly recommend California. You all should just go to California.
I think that's true, except for those poor people on a fixed income. Old people can't afford it. That's the terrible thing. That's why they like settle for Florida and for Phoenix. But you're right. I mean, it is one of the most beautiful places, and if only I could afford to live there, I might go there too.
hey, before we go on, I just wanted to say, you the last 2 days you've had trouble saying the episode number because we were at episode 1110, and now we're at 1112. And I actually saw an article yesterday on that has some statistics about podcasts. And you can be very proud to say those numbers, Jamie, because only 0.25% of all podcasts have ever gotten over 1,000 episodes.
No way!
Yeah, so you can be very proud to say those numbers.
We should play the lottery.
A very minor minority that has ever gotten to that point. There
I'll work a little harder, but it just gets. I'm not a numbers person, so I think from now on you're going to have to phonetically spell it out. I'm like 1,000. What is that? What is that? I don't know. It's confusing.
I have to laugh every time because you do get stuck on it almost every morning. It's like, I don't think the audience knows this, but I have a chuckle. It's fun for me.
When it was the number 4, it was easy. Oh, it's episode 4. I think we should start over.
All right, Jennifer.
What's coming up on today's show, you ask?
Yes.
On today's Back
Did
on
you
Track
hear that
Wednesday
part?
Edition. Following a thorough review of Jamie's first ride on Thor, Laura from Rutgers Equine Science Center stops by. It's Horse Health Report Day, and she has some advice on pasture preservation. Mud season is coming, people. Next up, the Horse and Country TV's European Report has the headlines and the best horse videos from across the pond. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Well, my daily Winnie goes out to some friends of ours and their doggy. The doggy's name is Caveman, and he is a dog de Bordeaux, which is like a mastiff with a French accent. And won best of breed at the Westminster Dog Show, Madison Square Garden. And you actually know these people, Jamie. His name is Kent Hopper and Ginger Estep, and they are the ones that invite us to come up to Ada every 6 months to the show. And they've been so kind to us over the last 5 years. So they're the ones that are responsible for us being at that show. And they own this dog. It's their dog.
Ah.
And they bred the dog. They have the mom. And these are kind of big, sort of mastiff looking with the flappy lips and drool everywhere kind. They're kind of brownish colored. Yeah. So, so she was very proud and made that announcement yesterday. So congratulations to Ginger and Kent. And I think it's just kind of fun that it's Hopper Exposition's own dog.
So now, forgive me for not knowing. So when it is the best of breed, then he moves to best in show, right? I mean, that's
yeah.
the next.
No, no, it goes
right.
to group.
That's
next.
For the Beagle one. The Beagle one this year.
No. They go from breed to group.
Right.
And then they
okay,
go to show.
Okay, so then.
Oh, yeah.
So is he now, like today, competing in the best of group?
No, it's already done. Yep, Westminster's over. A Beagle won the whole thing this year, believe it or not.
That's pretty lame.
And you know why why we say that? Is we have a couple of Beagles that live in the farm next door, and I'll tell you what.
Oh,
if I had a sniper rifle, I probably would have shot them.
You
someday.
Would not.
They never stop barking. And, oh, they just are the noisiest damn dogs. They never
you know what?
Stop.
I don't like beagles only because my ex-boyfriend randomly, some girl at his office gave him her beagle. And so it was like he started making really good friends with this girl who gave him the dog. And that was my boyfriend at the time. And so I hated the beagle. And you know what? I believe he ended up marrying her. Thank you very much. But whatever. I don't hold a
beagle
grudge.
Beagle love.
Moving in on my man. All due to a beagle. Okay, see, I'm cleansed. I had just had to let that go, and now I'm okay. Jeez Louise. My daily Winnie goes out to Magic. Magic is a therapy horse at Gentle Carousel Miniature Therapy Horses. We've had them on the show before. That is actually, I think, the only time I've been interviewing somebody and actually cried during the interview because what they were telling me was so beautiful. Magic just got inducted into the United States Equestrian Foundation's Horse Stars Hall of Fame, okay? Horse Stars Hall of Fame by the United States Equestrian Federation. Now, while Magic was there, she got to meet and was introduced by Harry Dallaire, Snowman's trainer. Snowman even said, "I'll never forget you, Magic," as he put the hat on Magic's head and kind of announced Magic to the whole crowd. It was just such a beautiful thing, and I love that horse. And that horse has won all sorts of awards, and they continue to go. And if you guys ever have a little extra money, send it to Gentle Carousel Miniature Therapy Horses. What they do there is so cool. So Magic is the one that goes to, like, one of the places she goes all the time is the rehab hospital in Gainesville, Florida. She goes to see patients that have suffered strokes, traumatic brain and spinal cord injuries, amputation and burns. She works with occupational speech and physical therapists as part of a treatment team. She has inspired patients in, if I keep reading this, I'm going to cry. She has inspired people to reach their arms out and helped patients who have learned to use walkers and wheelchairs. She demonstrates training stairs and ramps for people. She works with patients who, because of her, have stood and walked for the first time since their accident. Oh, kidding me. Give the horse $1 million. I can't
now,
stand it. Anyway,
I,
way to go, Ben.
And Magic has actually been on our show before. We did a show back in June 10th, 2013, and we did it live from Gator Horse Trailers, and Wayne Williams co-hosted that day. He had flown
yes,
in. And
I didn't get
was,
to go.
Yeah, that's right. And the people from Gentle Carousel came down, and they brought Magic along. So we actually had Magic right there at the table with us, doing the show with us, and got to meet Magic. And he is a special guy. He's black with a white face. And he just stood there the whole time we were doing the show. He's so cute. He was so darn cute.
Wow, that's really cool. What a cool horse. Sorry, I was calling it a her because
you know,
all minis are girls. They just seem like they should all be girls.
Do you know Harry Dallaire? I always when you say that he's done something, I always think he's not alive anymore. He's one of those people that I'm going, is he still around? And then every time you say he's still around, it goes, oh, yeah, he's still alive.
He is still alive. He's still going. I'm telling you, people like that live forever. He's amazing. I mean, the guy has been through everything in the world and is now becoming famous, you know, again, for his horse. And oh, my gosh, I love him.
Aren't there celebrities like that, though, when you hear their names and you go, isn't she dead? When did she die about 10 years ago?
Maybe, but don't put Harry Dallaire in that category.
I don't know. I think about him being like from a past generation, you know? Well, let's get on to the thing that, before I get in any more trouble, the thing that everybody wants to hear about, and that was your first ride on your newly named horse. First of all, let's talk about the name.
Well, I thought about it ahead of time, and then when I met him and realized, first of all, he's huge and he's gentle and he's good looking, I had to name him Thor. I just, you know, my obsession with Thor, and I just
I think it's less with the actual character than with the person who played the character, but.
Well, that's the thing, is now it kind of gives me a little justification because he is more like the superhero than the actor, okay? This horse is so cool, you guys.
And he's stocky. I mean, he's not just tall. He's built. He's a tank.
Every time people come over and see him, they go, wow, he's different for you. And that's so true.
Not a skin thoroughbred.
I'm like, he's stabled next to Edward, who is like 16'3", skinny, you know, just tall and lanky. And then I've got this
2x4.
Yes, he is so huge, you guys. He is the biggest Mustang I've ever seen. And I don't think I appreciated how big he was when I saw him because the guy riding him was really big. But, you know, when you're trying to mount a horse for the first time, and it's bareback, like I did the other day. That was really hard. I had to get him mounting block.
Let's remind everybody that Jamie's about 5'2¾". So
that's exactly how tall I am. So for those who don't know, I adopted this Mustang from the prison, and you know, I'm really, really excited. So yes, we named him Thor, and as all little girls, we all have to, when we come up with a name for our horse, we also have to come up with a show name, like. Oh, well, what's his barn name going to be? And then what's his show name going to be? Jennifer, am I right here?
Yes. You have to have two separate names. It's a rule.
Yes. You have to. So I think, you know, you can't just call him Thor. So I think that his barn name is Thor, and then his show name is going to be Superhero.
Oh, that's awesome!
I love it. So Superhero.
Now, I really thought you would have, his show name would have been Chris Helmsworth. I thought you were going to go that way.
Speaking of Chris, I need to make it a public apology because remember the other day I said, you can't name a horse Chris. My friend Stephanie, who listens to this show, has a horse named Chris, and she called me afterwards, and she was like, what do you mean you can't name a horse Chris? And I was like,
you
oh my
trouble.
God, I totally forgot. I totally got in trouble. So, Stephanie, I'm sorry. Chris is a great name. I just thought you can't name another horse Chris. That's what I really meant.
Taken. Chris is taken.
So, when you left the show the other day, when we were finishing on Monday, by the way, people really loved it. I heard so many comments about you're telling the story and people crying and everything else. So good job with that. But when you left the show the other day, you said, I'm going to get on a bareback. I'm going to channel my inner Alyssa Wallace. And
yes.
You did. I was shocked you actually got on a bareback before you put the saddle on.
I just thought, you know, let me just sit on him and see what happens. And we had turned him out in the arena when we got here so he could roll and stretch. And so he'd been out in the arena for about 12 hours. And so I figured, well, what the hell? He's already here. Let's get on. And he was not as excited about the whole bareback mounting and dismounting as I was hoping he would be. So when I did get on him, he was very nervous, and he did scoot. And, you know, I just had the halter and lead rope, so I just kind of pulled his nose to the left and held on. And let me tell you, as a 37-year-old woman who hasn't ridden bareback really at all since I was a kid, just climbing on him, sitting on him, and him walking in a circle, I was sore afterwards. Oh, my gosh. So yeah, I did get on him bareback, and I sat on him, and my mom was there, and I was like, take a picture. So she took a picture, and I pet him and loved him, and then I got off because he was not very thrilled. And I realized they don't do any bareback riding at the prison. So that was his first experience. He barely knows me. I'm that crazy lady that put him in the box and drove across the country. So at this point, he doesn't really know me. I barely fed him, you know. So yesterday I just decided, actually I'm friends with this other girl on Facebook who got Thor's brother. We are assuming they're brothers.
Oh, really?
They were roughed up at the same time in the same herd. And she bought Goose. So she bought Goose, but she lives like a couple hours away. So she took Goose home, and they're riding around on Goose already. And I was like, well, if she's going to do it, I'm going to do it, keeping up with the Joneses. You know how that's how we are. I'm like, oh, wait, they're already on. I'm behind, even though my horse stood in a trailer for 2 days and is still kind of getting his sea legs. So I decided yesterday morning to get on him and, you know, we kind of fashioned a little square paddock. It's my little square pen, not a round pen. And I put him in there, and, you know, all the paperwork that they give you basically kind of tells you, okay, this was done, you know, so the best options for you are to take a lead rope, work on leading, work on lunging a little bit, brush him a little bit, then you can tack him up and ride him. So I kind of followed by the letter, and it worked out great. I got on him, and oh, my gosh, he's dreamy. I love him so much. I can't even stand it. I Chad was there, and my mom was there, and I just said, do I have hearts for shaped eyes right now? Because I just, like, I was like, I just couldn't love him anymore. He's got this, like, swaying walk. He's, like, super powerful, really forward walk. The second time I rode him, because Chad didn't get to see the first time, so I had to do it again for him. He has a great trot, a really big, powerful trot. He's very sensitive, so just, you know, they ride him Western, and I put an English saddle on him, and I think my legs being very close to him sets him off. He's not quite used to that. So it's very new. You put your leg on him and he like jumps, but he also has a really lovely whoa. I mean, he's going to halt his whole salute is going to be awesome.
Well,
like,
good.
That's all I can think of is the future.
If we have
of,
a
like,
wild horse that his best gait is halt, that's perfect.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Can't
and
get
so
any better
I,
than that.
Yeah, I mean, I just, he's so kind, and he's, you know, you can tell he gets a little bit nervous, but he just stands there, and he's very patient, and, you know, I was able to pick his front feet. He was not okay with me picking his back feet yet, so my farrier said she's not coming over until all 4 feet are totally no problem. So the front feet, the back feet, he got a little bit nervous. So I just said, okay, we'll wait for another day, you know. And I you guys, he's just so cool. I love him. I feel bad for the rest of my horses. I'm like, I don't even know who you guys are anymore. I'm obsessed. I did ride Edward yesterday though. So, but I just I'm just madly in love. It's so cool, you guys. I recommend it. And again, I don't have the confidence or the facility to house a totally wild one. So this was the perfect opportunity for me to go up to the Carson City. And if you guys want to follow, the next sale is May 30th. So they're all the inmates are getting their new horses right now, and they're starting the training. So May 30th is the next auction, and you can follow BLM Nevada on Facebook, and they keep posting stuff about the new horses, or they will.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm so glad that's working out for you. How's he taking to the other horses?
Well, you know what? The pony is actually right next to him, and the pony has been really mean to him. It's like the pony gets his butt kicked so much that he's like, I'm going to dominate at least one horse on this property. And so he goes after him, and Thor doesn't care. He's like, oh, hi, small flea, you know?
Yeah, what?
He doesn't care. He doesn't seem to get bothered. But I haven't introduced any horses to him. I haven't put him out with anybody. He's going to stay in his little pen until he kind of understands our routine. I think it would be, you know, the best option for him. And I don't know when I'm going to turn him out. He's in his little paddock in his stall, and he seems to be quite happy. So we'll slowly introduce everything else, I guess.
Well, terrific. We're looking forward to hearing all about that. And as I said, I gave you 2 years to be at Rolex. So let's see, 2017 Rolex should be perfect.
Okay. I'll be there.
Just saying. Hey, we got some
watching.
We have some news stories, but I have to get to this one right away. I just have to do this one right away because it's the story of the day. It's in Napoleonville. By the way, isn't that the greatest name for a town? It's Napoleonville, and this is in, of all places, Louisiana, of course. Napoleonville, Louisiana. This guy decided to get drunk one night, and he really wanted to go to the Mardi Gras parade that was in Thibodeau? I don't know how to say that name. Thibodeau. He wanted to go to the Mardi Gras parade in Thibodeau, and he had no way to really get there. But there was this horse that was standing in the field right across the street from where he lived. So he thought, well, if I just go take the horse, and happened to find a bridle that was hanging there, and he decided he was going to ride the 18 miles to Thibodeau. So he gets on this horse completely drunk, and he was determined that he was going to get there. Well, it didn't go so well because the horse kept bucking him off. And he'd get bucked off, and he'd hop back on, and then he'd get bucked off, and then he'd hop back on. He finally got so fed up with the horse that he just let the horse loose, and he walked home. Well, the police found the horse in a field. It was reported stolen, and found the horse in a field. They did find it was just standing there eating. And so they recovered the horse and everything, and they kind of figured out that that this guy had taken the horse. And so they went and arrested him. But, yeah, so he was charged with cruelty to animals and felony theft. And also for stealing an item worth more than $10,000. So he might have some – well, he's in jail right now. He didn't have enough for bail. So there you go.
If someone stole one of my horses drunk and tried to ride it 18 miles – well, first of all, the horse gets a major – pile of carrots for bucking him off repeatedly. I love that. It was almost like Maximus entangled. You know, it's like, you're not my rider. get off. And the horse turns around and tries to bite him, you know. But the fact that somebody would steal my horse and try to ride him, some drunk idiot, I would be also in jail arrested for assault. I would seriously take a 2x4 to that person's head, even if they were in custody, and hit him over the head. I can't even imagine the fierce way that I would behave after that. Oh, just kick some butt.
Just let him try and steal Thor and ride him 18 miles to the Mardi Gras parade.
You know what? Thor would probably go, bless his little heart.
He'd be like, so hey, Mardi Gras parade. That'd be fun. Beads. I'll go.
I know, well, it's a guy, you know, he's like, right. What they also tell you in
Make
the paperwork
women.
Is don't wear perfume. They don't know who women are. They've never been around women. I was probably the first woman to ever touch him. And it's like, it's a guy that wants me to, okay, let's go.
Tops up. Thor's coming. All right. hey, there's another, I found this Indiegogo yesterday. I just have to talk about this. So, you know, every once in a while I look at Indiegogo and I look at some of the
other.
It's a crowdfunding thing, sort of like some of the others that are out there. And the thing about Indiegogo, as opposed to Kickstarter, you have to raise the entire amount of money or you don't get any that you have as a goal. With Indiegogo, you can raise part of it and you get to keep it. So you don't have to raise the whole thing, which is why people use Indiegogo instead of Kickstarter. So this group, that this inventor guy by the name of Cedar Anderson, Cedar, that's kind of a cool first name, Cedar, and he's just what you would picture as an inventor. I saw his picture. He's just what you would imagine. Hair just hasn't been washed in forever and sticking out, just what you would imagine. Well, he invented this system for beekeepers that contains the hive. And what it does is it somehow has drainage on it and these little pipes coming out so that you don't have to, you know, normally to get the honey out, you have to take the hives apart, right? And you're disturbing the bees and it's kind of a messy situation. You have to wear the outfit and the whole thing and to get the honey out. Well, this actually works in a flow mechanism that the honey just flows out of the hives into jars. I don't know the technology behind it. I didn't look that far. But it's you don't disturb the bees. There's a handle. You
is
just
it
turn the...
Kind of like the tap on a maple tree, you know? Like
yeah.
You
That's
pop
exactly
it in
what
there
it's like. That's exactly
no
what
kidding.
It's like. You turn the thing and the honey flows out into your jar. So it's kind of cool, the technology he's developed. And you would think, you know, he wanted to raise $70,000. And you would kind of think, well, there's enough beekeepers in the country to raise about $70,000, right? I thought, well, that was probably a fair thing to raise about $70,000. Take a guess at what it's up to.
You know what? I can't even imagine. I get surprised on this stuff all the time.
$2.8 million.
What? I never would have guessed that high.
How many beekeepers are there in this country? Apparently a lot. $2.8 million. And
wow.
It took $600 to get the hive. In other words, to get one of the complete units, it was $600. 1,500 people did that one.
Whoa.
I know.
So this, if you donate money to this crowdfunding, you get one of these.
At certain levels, you get one of them, you know, ready to go. At certain levels, you get, certain things, and one of them is that level. But I just didn't know there was that much. And apparently, disturbing the bees is a big problem because this is certainly taken off. I hope this thing is for real and it actually works. But I know it has nothing to do with horses. It just blew my mind when I saw it.
That's amazing. They call it flow boxes. Okay, I found the link. And oh, my gosh. But, yeah, you got to think about that. First of all, how much honey is in the world? And how much do I spend trying to get local honey? You know, when you buy a jar, I remember we were at this little place near my house, a little farmer's market, and they said to buy local honey. So it helps, like, with your allergies. And so I bought a jar of local honey. And Chad was like, what? $15?
I know.
It's expensive. So
yes.
I can imagine maybe it'll bring the price of local honey down. My gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy, though.
I don't know. I just had to talk about that. It was cool. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break for our commercial sponsor for the day. And, of course, that's Back on Track Products, as it is, twice a month here on the show. And then we're going to come back and talk a little bit of horse health coming up here in just a minute.
Back on Track is a revolutionary line of pain relief products for horses and humans. Utilizing ancient Chinese experience, modern scientific findings, and skilled textile production, we have developed a line of products made of polyester fabric with ceramic powder melted into the threads. This ceramic-infused fabric reflects body heat as infrared waves, a form of energy that has a documented pain-relieving effect. It can reduce inflammation, ease muscle tension, increase blood circulation, and boost the healing process. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your muscles before exercise or work, thereby reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, they can also expedite the recovery from established injuries. Our wide range of products for horses includes blankets, coolers, saddle pads, boots, and wraps. We also offer a number of products for humans, including back and knee braces, gloves, bedding, and clothing. Back on Track is used by the top equestrians in the world, including McLean Ward, Stefan Peters, BZ Madden, Michelle Gibson, Margie Engel, and Debbie McDonald, just to name a few. Stefan Peters is one of the best dressage riders in the United States.
We've been using the Back on Track products now for approximately 4 years, starting with the leg wrap and the blankets. We've seen and noticed wonderful results from these products. We've no longer used poultice in our barn. The horses come out with much tighter legs, seem to have many less ailments, and the side effects of using poultice are not noticed, obviously, using the Back on Track wraps. Using the blanket, the horses have far less back trouble, far less irritation, allows us to do less veterinary treatments on the horse's joints, as well as chiropractic work, and we really feel that it's been a huge improvement for us and helped us have some great results.
You can find Back on Track products at most major retailers. Find them on the web at backontrackproducts.com or on Facebook. Just search for Back on Track products.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
Well, we're not going to freak anybody out today. We're actually going to educate, and thank goodness we have Laura Kinney here to help us do that, because this is something that, especially in the winter, it's a constant problem for people, and even summertime when we get a lot of rain, is it is preserving your turnout areas, keeping your pasture from becoming a mud pit. And we welcome Laura Kinney to the show. Hey, Laura.
Hello. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, thanks for coming. And Laura is from Rutgers Equine Science Center. And tell everybody a little bit about what you do there.
So I work for Rutgers in the Animal Science Department. And we have an arm of the university called Cooperative Extension. And so this arm does a lot of outreach and education for the agricultural community. So that's where I'm kind of located, and I work specifically with the horse community. So we've done educational programs just since I've been here in business planning, pasture management, lameness, all sorts of interesting things.
Now, I would like for you to potentially turn in an application at University of Arizona, because they, when I wanted to go over there and ask some questions about my hay, they actually told me that the two guys that used to be in the horse program have retired, and that was a couple of years ago, and they haven't hired anybody since. So there are
openings
out here. And I was shocked that they just, they're like, yeah, we just haven't hired anybody else. We don't have anybody to help
you.
Sorry. Yeah. So I had nobody to help me with my hay and my pastures, and I love what you guys do, it is education, and it's pretty much free education for everybody that is going to call you guys and ask questions. What kind of stuff do you guys hear from the people the most?
We get a lot of veterinary questions, actually, which is not great because we don't have a veterinary school, and a lot of our questions are like, help, my horse is bleeding, what do I do? And we're like, call a veterinarian right now.
Call the doctor.
So we get a lot of that. We get a lot of pasture management, which we can help out with. We have a lot of people here at this university that have a lot of experience with pastures. So that works out.
And that's what we're going to talk about today is keeping your pasture from becoming a mud pit and preserving your turnout areas. Gosh, there's so many ways that I could start. How do you guys recommend you do that?
Well, the first thing that we need to think about when we're dealing with mud is that a mud problem is a drainage problem. There's no place for the water to go. It's just going to collect in your pasture. So really, when we're dealing with mud, we can do all sorts of temporary measures, but the key problem here is drainage. So there's a lot of things we can do to fix drainage. I'm over here in New Jersey, so the winter is actually, it's not even possible to get started on this. So I think this is a good time to talk about what we can do during the warmer months of the year so that we can prepare make some changes on our farm.
So what type of things, for us here, because I'm on irrigated horse property, we have a tractor come in once a year and rip the pasture, put these huge, deep cuts into our pastures, because we just have a 3-acre place, and so about 2 acres of it is pasture. So she comes in and rips to help with the drainage of the irrigation water. Is that something you guys recommend?
We don't see that a lot here. Are they ripping it? They're not ripping up the grass. They're just sort of adding.
Oh, yeah. She rips the grass up.
Dragging poles through it? Oh, okay.
No, she actually, cuts it simply because apparently out here, I mean, there's only Bermuda grass out here. So apparently the Bermuda roots really like to be ripped, and it seems to really work, but it also really helps with the drainage. So I guess when it just gets super packed down. Whatever.
Yeah,
that makes sense. What do you guys do?
Well, we actually posted on our Facebook page today, our Equine Science Center Facebook page, our top 5 mud management tips. So anyone can check that out, and I can go through them real briefly.
Great.
The first one is something that you can do at any time of the year, almost no cost involved. Remove all of the manure and the feed from the ground. Because the organic matter in these materials, it acts like a sponge. So it just soaks up all the water that touches it, and it makes your area muddier than it has to be.
Okay.
So that's our first key, is just get rid of anything that can suck up water. Manure, feed, which includes hay. Hay will break down into organic matter and suck up all the water.
Laura, do you have any statistics on how many people actually clean their paddocks? You know, I always wondered that.
None whatsoever.
Yeah, I always wondered that. We do here because, again, we have smaller paddocks, and in Florida, we have the same problem. You don't want the manure in with the sand in our case. But it just makes a mess. But I bet you there's at least 50% that never touch their paddocks.
Probably. Yep.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you can focus on the areas that aren't vegetated if you're looking at a pasture situation. Maybe you've just got some heavy use areas where the horses loaf around the feeders or the water or the gate. You know, if those are your big mud areas, then that's really the only area you'd need to focus on.
Right.
Okay. So clean up your poop, people, and your hay and everything like
and
that.
And use your XMT MFG manure fork to do it. Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely.
I got the plug in.
Okay, and what is the next thing?
Overseeding. So adding more plants to your pasture area. The plant roots actually suck up water, and they anchor the soil in place. So when you have mud, you've actually got erosion. These soil particles are just going everywhere, and you're losing them, too. So it's an environmental concern as well. You're losing soil, sediment, and the nutrients that are in this muddy, manure-y water. So if we're overseeding and we're adding more plants to our pasture, that helps sort of just everything in place.
Okay, and when do you recommend the overseeding? What time of year?
Well, this is going to vary by your location. One thing to remember is that anytime you're planting grass, if you want that grass to survive, you need to keep horses off of it for about 6 months. You need to let those roots grow a really good, strong root system will keep it in place. Otherwise, the horse can just kind of grab it with its teeth and up come the roots, and there goes all the seed that you just put down.
Right.
So at least 6 months from when you want this mud, you know, solving problem would be a good time.
Okay. So overseed, clean your pastures. What else?
All right. This is when it starts getting a little more in-depth, and this is something that you'll need to start thinking about now, particularly if you're like us in the Northeast and it's too cold, too snowy to do anything. Heavy use area pad. So this is basically a method for just keeping the mud down. You are excavating some of the mud that's in the field, and this would also be a good thing to do like near the gate, the waterer, the feeder, wherever you've got a lot of mud, a lot of horses congregated. So you excavate some of the mud, and then you layer geotextile fabric, some stones, different size gravel, and then some footing on top. So what this does is this physically separates the soil from the area that your horses are walking. It gives the water a place to go, and the water doesn't build up as much. Plus,
gosh,
with the geotextile fabric, it separates the soil and all that muddy stuff from
and how
stones
many people have boarded in places that they would have loved to not step in, you know, knee-deep mud at the gate. It seems like it's always the gate.
Absolutely.
Because they all filter through it. And, oh, my gosh, I know that I've been places and boarded places where you got to put your tall boots on to even get your horse out of the pasture. So that is, you know, I mean, that's an investment worth making if you're having a problem like that.
It definitely is. We've got pastures here at Rutgers. Some of them have these heavy use areas in front of the gate, and it is a dream to go get the horses when it's wet outside. And then other ones, you're up to your ankles.
Yeah, without a doubt. Okay, and what's the next thing?
All right, the next one would be designating a sacrifice lot within your pasture. So sacrifice lot sounds kind of weird, but it's really
say, that's
your...
an unfortunate name, I think. I
know.
We need to change that name.
We have a bunch of names that we can use.
I picture a guillotine out there in the middle of the field.
I know, it's terrible. I always try to define it as quickly as possible when I say it. You're sacrificing the vegetation in this one small area to preserve the vegetation everywhere else. So that's why we call it a sacrifice lot. You could call it a dry lot or a stress lot or anything else.
Dry lot. I think
we'll go with dry lot, okay.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
The death lot.
So anytime that you want to, that it's really not good grazing conditions, say it's really wet outside or maybe it's really dry outside, when you're grazing your horses in these conditions, they're actually damaging the plants more than they would if, you know, it was just a normal day. Maximal moisture and, you know, the plants aren't stressed in any way. So when grazing conditions are not ideal, you want to keep the horses off of the pasture.
All right. So, you know, my husband and I just talked about this because we have a dream of having, you know, a 10-acre place sometime in the future. And I did. I told him, we have to, I'm going to use the word sacrifice. I like we have to have a sacrifice lot.
It's very dramatic.
But it's a great idea just to have a kind of a paddock close by where you can throw the horses so you don't ruin your pasture, but you're actually still able to turn your horses out. So I love that idea.
Exactly. And I don't have time to talk about it today, but if you were to look into a rotational grazing system, the sacrifice lot is really the center of a rotational grazing system, which does an even better job of saving your grasses.
Rotational grazing. Give us the brief. Brief.
100 words or less.
Yes.
You are taking a big area of pasture and you're dividing it into smaller areas. And you rotate your horses through these smaller areas one at a time so that the grasses get a chance to rest, recover, and regrow before you graze them again.
So you're not
so
talking
you have
about
the
rotate,
same area.
You're talking about rotating them. You leave them on there for maybe a month and then go to the next one. It's not
less.
Every day kind of thing.
It would be, depending on the size, the way we do it here at Rutgers, it's about a week.
A week
on and about 3 weeks off. So if you have enough small fields, and you do a week in each one, it works out.
Right. Unfortunately, most people don't have the luxury of having that much space, you know?
Yes, it's true. Yeah.
But, no, I do the same thing with I had two pastures, and then I use my neighbor's field, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to give this one a couple days off. I'm going to give this one a couple days off. You know, unfortunately, when you put them out there, that couple days disappears pretty quick. But you can tell if you know your land and you know your pastures that when it kind of needs some time off. But I do want to go ahead and point out that this has solidified my decision to purchase more land someday in the future.
Good.
Honey, we need more land. Sorry, honey. Well, he hates me. I'm lucky to be married. Well, listen, where can people go to learn more?
We have a ton of information on the Equine Science Center website, which is esc.rutgers.edu, and the whole website is getting a facelift any day now. It might even be updated at this point. I'm not sure. But it's going to be completely updated, much easier to find all this wonderful information that we're talking about. So give it a look. If it doesn't look brand new, then check back next week or the week after.
It's all the boyfriends in the IT department are doing that. It's all the boyfriends.
Yeah.
True. And it's also facebook.com/Rutgers Equine Science Center. And there's always really good information being posted on that as well. So, Laura Kinney, thank you so much for being on the show. You've been an absolute pleasure. I love listening to you.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love being able to just get this stuff out.
Absolutely. Cheers. I've got some work to do. Now we know.
And stay warm in New Jersey. Stay warm and dry.
Oh, we're trying. All right. Thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
This is Laura Kinney, Rutgers Equine Science Center. Well, we're going to take a break for a commercial, and also I have a song today, and it's a request. I got this email. It says, Glenn, I have a green 12-year-old mare, and at times I feel that our theme
wait,
song...
Stop.
Yeah.
If it's a request and you're going to read, you have to do it in Casey Kasem's voice. It's a request and dedication. I've got a request and dedication.
Dedication, yes. And this is the email I got. Glenn, I have a green 12-year-old mare, and at times I feel that our theme song should be When I Get That Pony Rode by Templeton Thompson. Would you please play that song for me one morning? Lindsay Rausch. This is for you, Lindsay. Right after this word from ByMeta. We all know the importance of deworming our horses, and Dr. Ellefson of ByMeta Equine is helping us make sure we are doing it right. Listen for his 4-part series the first week of every month on this very show. I just wanted to remind everyone, if you are due for deworming, why not save a few bucks on the popular ByMeta line of wormers, including Equimax, Bimectin, Exodus, Exodus Multidose, and Equil. You can find coupons and special offers at buymediaequine.com, including a variety of rebate offers from cash to free ivermectin. You can also get up to $2 a dose back for Equimax. And while you're at ByMeta Equine, get your free horse health record keeper, and you can just download it there. Plus, learn a bunch about parasites and deworming at ByMeta, that's B-I-M-E-D-A, equine.com. We at the Horse Radio Network all use ByMeta dewormers because we want the best for our horses, and we know you want the best for yours, too. ByMeta, equine.com, and tell them the Horse Radio Network sent you.
Guessing wasn't such a perfect landing.
And that is Templeton Thompson. When I get that pony road, hey, puppy, get out of there. Sorry, puppy's going behind the computer. And that was a request and dedication sent out to Lindsay Rausch and her 12-year-old mare for, I guess it tries to buck her off all the time.
That's what I get
like.
Out of it.
Have you seen Templeton Thompson's video? It sounds like a hell of a horse. Good job, Lindsay. Ride it, cowgirl. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by our friends at Back on Track Products. And got some news for me, Glenn? I think I'm ready.
Yeah, you know, there's a property for sale you might be interested in. This is about 20 miles north of Wellington on the Florida coast. Yeah,
probably cheap.
It's a beautiful, cheap place. It is owned by the CEO of FedEx. Now, when they bought the property, it was a bare lot. It was just nothing but land. They bought it for $2 million, and then they decided to build on it. And what they built on it was quite impressive. They have a 12,000-square-foot home with a 1,000-bottle wine cellar. A 1,000-bottle wine cellar. Do you ever have wine around that long that you could need to store it? You know,
No. I figure it's going to go bad, and I should drink it.
Right. That's right. That it doesn't keep. I mean, unless you have a 1,000-bottle wine cellar, and then you probably want to keep it around. Well, this is an equestrian property, and it is a very nice aquarium. You should see the pictures of this place. It's done in the Mediterranean style. The house has 5 bedrooms and 5 full bathrooms, as well as 3 half bathrooms. That's 8 bathrooms. When we had our big house in Pennsylvania there, we had 5 bathrooms. And let me tell you, trying to keep up the toilet paper in 5 bathrooms is fun. And trying to clean 5 bathrooms, that's fun too. Well, get this. They have, in addition to the spacious wine cellar, the main house also features an enclosed saltwater pool and a chef's kitchen. The property's barn features 8 paddocks and equestrian facilities that are outfitted with riding and jumping areas. There are riding trails throughout. It's dotted with cypress and pine trees. You can view the entire property from the main house's top floor terrace and observation deck. Yes,
holy
they have a
cow.
So you want to watch your wife ride? Well, you can just go up in the observation deck and have a bottle of wine, apparently. The house faces a 4-acre lake, which is stocked with bass. And now get this, you're going to love this. To withstand those famous Florida hurricanes, the main house, guest house, and barn were all built with impact glass and reinforced with concrete roofs, walls, and floors. It's a freaking concrete roof.
Holy smokes. Okay, so what you're telling me is I might have to take a loan out for this one. I can't pay cash.
Well, you know, I'm not done yet. The main house also features a walk-in vault that can be used as a safe room. Now, that same house I was talking about that we had 5 bathrooms, we actually had a bank vault. It was 10 by 10 inside the vault with the big door, and it had the dial on the big door and everything. And because the guy who owned the house before us owned a gun, he had a serious million-dollar gun collection, and he kept his guns in there. So we actually had, as part of our tack shop, you could go in there to buy books. We had the books stacked in the vault, and people thought that was pretty cool. That was a talking point. And I think one time during a storm, we actually went in the vault. And then we never closed the door because we were afraid, with the combination being about 85 steps, we'd never get it open. But during a party one day, we closed the door, and we did manage to get it open after about a half an hour. But some of the people wanted to go inside during the party, and I said, no, we better not do that because that would be bad if I couldn't get it ever open. And what are the police going to come out and do, blow it up? So we actually did have a bank vault in their house. This one's a little more expensive. Because of the improvements, it's gone from $2.7 million piece of land to a $22.9 million piece of land. So there you go. Yep.
Wow.
Get this, though. This guy who owns it, his name is Weiss, he is the 23rd employee to join Federal Express in 1972.
Oh, my God.
Employee number 23, he began his career as a flight dispatcher and then eventually became president and CEO of the company in 1998 and retired in the year 2000 at the age of 55. They want to now move, because he is now 70, they want to move into a smaller version of the mansion. So they're trying to downsize a little bit.
I would be more than happy to trade homes. you want to move into a smaller, downsized version, I have it right here. We'll just exchange keys.
Phoenix is beautiful, too.
Exactly. It's lovely in the winter. There's probably polo around here, and there's lots of golf, so they should be very happy here.
Well, if anybody wants to buy it, the Daily Mail has a link. Jennifer will put the link up there.
I'm sure. Hey, Mom, do you want something at dinner? So one story about something that I cannot believe is legal. I cannot believe that it's not completely banned all over the world and all over the country. Utah looks to ban horse tripping. Okay. It's just what it sounds. It's a Mexican rodeo sport that I'm using sport with finger quotes. In 11 states have already banned it. It's where the guys, the charros, stand in the middle of a circle and they chase a horse around and they have to rope its front legs and trip it as it travels at a fast gallop. When the front legs of a galloping horse are roped, he trips and falls violently. And this happens in clandestine charreada rodeos, where a single roper on foot ropes the front legs of a horse as it gallops past him. Horse tripping has been banned in 12 states, including Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, Arizona, and New Mexico. And they mention those because those are very strong rodeo states. It's also been banned, as you guys know, in film and television for 50 years. And I guess the person behind getting this banned in Utah is, let me see here, they don't have his name. Oh, Ivory is one of the guys that's behind trying to get it gone, I guess. And he said that it's fair to say we wouldn't have settled the West without the help of horses, and yet here we have something that is not part of our tradition that is now coming into the U.S., so they're trying to ban it. So absolutely, we will keep you guys up to date on this. There is no reason it should not be banned. I can't even imagine. I didn't even know that was a thing. If I saw that going on in some rodeo, I would run down in the middle and be like, give me that rope. I would make a scene. I would definitely make a scene.
The ways we find to do stupid things. Well, let's
humans
do this.
Humans are the worst, and also
let's
the best at times.
You're right, exactly. Can't live with them, can't live without them. Well, there's one that we like to live with. She's coming right up.
You would never see that in England. Ever.
No, ever.
Now it's time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV.
And that means it's time for Victoria from Horse and Country TV to join us for the European Report. Do you have
I'm
horse
embarrassed
tripping?
She's heard that.
I know. Do you have horse tripping over there, Victoria?
I have no idea what horse tripping is.
Well, that's good. It's a good thing you don't know what it is. That's we're glad to hear that, actually.
You're going to have to enlighten me now, or else I'm going to have to Google it.
I just did the story on it. Yeah, it's a Mexican rodeo technique where a horse gallops around and a guy ropes its front legs and trips it at a dead gallop. It's the most horrible thing I've ever seen, and I think those people should die. Sorry, carry on.
No, definitely not going on here, and very glad it doesn't. That doesn't sound great at all.
Well, you had some fun stories that happened over there, and one of them, I love the title of this, Pint-Sized Pony Gets His Own Periscope. What's that about?
Yeah, it's a story that's been really well picked up here in the UK press, and it's about a little Shetland pony who lives at the Ebony Horse Club in Brixton. Now, Brixton is a very inner city part of London, and it's quite an incredible place. It's under a flyover, surrounded by high-rise flats, and you have this beautiful little riding stables where all the local kids can go and ride. And so they had this little Shetland pony called Pedro who couldn't see over their big stable doors, So they came up with a competition to design a new means of Pedro being able to see over his stable door, and one of the kids came up with a periscope. So you have to head to our website to see the videos to see what he means. But he does have his own periscope, which is called a pedroscope, so that he can see over his stable door.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, the next story I got to tell you was something that we actually covered when we first started the Horse Radio Network. It had been in effect for a couple of years, and my first co-host, Helena, of the Stable Scoop Show, is a big fox hunter, and my wife, Jennifer, as well. And they hunted together at a drag hunt, which, for those that aren't familiar, there are two kinds of fox hunts. One where they actually hunt live animals and very seldom ever catch them or find them. But they do hunt live animals. And then the other is called a drag hunt, and that's where the huntsman or somebody the day before the hunt or the morning of the hunt takes a four-wheeler out and actually drags a scent of an animal that the dogs will look for around. So they guide where the hunters are going to go, and they can take them to certain places. And actually, Jennifer enjoys doing a drag hunt more than a live hunt because there's less standing around. It's much faster. You go faster, and you seem to get where someplace, whereas the live hunts, they tend to stand around more waiting for the hounds to catch a scent or do something. So you in England outlawed the live hunts back in 2005, right?
We did, and obviously it's a huge part of British heritage here. So there was massive outcry 10 years ago from the hunting community, who worried about, you know, horses having to be put down and hounds the same and people being out of a job. 10 years on, actually, hunting is still going strong in the UK. We still have all the 300 plus hunts that we had before the ban. It just means that the horses can still follow hounds, and the hounds can still follow a trail, but they're not allowed to catch the animals, or they have to be flushed out to people with shotguns. So basically, animals are still being killed, but it's just the legalities of how it's done. And this is what the Countryside Alliance are saying. It's just not workable. You know, it's a ridiculous law. It's not done anything to affect the hunting community. And it's time for it to be repealed. Meanwhile, the League Against Cruel Sports are saying that it's not strict enough and that they want to make it even tighter legislation. And with the general election looming here, I think it's going to be back on the political agenda lots and lots over the coming weeks.
Wow. You know, that says something about England, too, because, you know, if something like this wouldn't even make a blip in the United States. But you guys are so much more a horse culture over there than we are.
Absolutely. But I guess, you know, and it's kind of the same with field sports in America and hunting with guns and things. You know, we're getting tighter and tighter legislation here, and it is kind of urban lifestyles affecting what happens in the countryside. So I don't know if that's got a little more to do with it, but it's been a huge topic for years, and it doesn't seem to be going anywhere yet.
Is it, you know, I remember covering this back then, and we had the guy on from the Fox Hunting Association, and we, you know, we discussed it quite at length. And I think probably a lot of the people hunting over there found the same thing Jennifer did, is the hunts actually got a little more exciting with the drag hunt. Yeah, you don't have that stopping and turning and going different directions like you do with the live hunt, but you get to go faster and jumps at a much higher rate, and there's not as much standing around. So in a way, it's kind of a little more thrilling, but I get what you say about, I mean, hunting was used for you guys back, you know, back thousands of years for eating. So that's where it all first started, was, you know, you ate what you caught.
And now it's more about, you know, managing the countryside, spreading out the foxes so that they're not all in the same area, and, you know, protecting farmers' livestock. That's a huge problem over here. And there was lots of reasons for it. But it becomes a real class debate over here, and people see riders in their red coats, or their pinks as they're called, and they see sort of people with braying voices, and they think it's just all about toss chasing after poor innocent foxes, whereas actually it's dogs that are chasing or the foxes, and the horses are the means of keeping up with the hounds. You know, the riders are just following the hounds. That's the exciting part. It's not the actual kind of capturing of an animal that ever really appealed to, I'd say, the great majority of people who follow hounds. So it's a different one. I mean, I've been drag hunting. I haven't been fox hunting, mostly because it's quite prohibitively expensive here. But I did go drag hunting, and I was on my X-ray horse, and I was trying to keep him calm. And I thought, I'll just follow gently to begin with, and maybe do a bit of jumping later on once he's warmed up and settled down. And instead, they went straight for this line of huge hedges, and I refused to jump any of them. I did not have my my brave hat on yet by that stage, and so within half an hour they jumped all the huge fences, and then there was no jumping. So I didn't get it right at all, but it was quite fast, and I do remember galloping at speed across a ploughed field, thinking my poor horse's beautiful slender legs, and he was bred to go on fast going, and there he is across the ploughed field. So yes, I think it's a little bit too much of an adrenaline rush for me. It took me a while to recover.
So I guess you're not heading back to Scotland or Ireland to hunt either, where they're truly crazy. You're not going to be doing that anytime soon.
Well, Ireland, you know, still hunting's massive over there, and they've been untouched by the law so far. Hunting in Scotland actually changed when I still lived there. It's probably a big reason why I didn't hunt when I was in my teens and with Pony Club and stuff. And so the laws in Scotland changed before they did in England and Wales. But now, actually, I think the laws are slightly less strict in Scotland than they are compared to down here. So lots of people do go north of the border as well to experience hunting.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of people in America that would love to go over there and try it, but it is wild and crazy and fast. It's been big jumps.
There's one hunt in Ireland, and I can't remember which it is, but they jump the most ridiculous ditches you've ever seen. They're like vertical banks down into huge, big ditches, and it's absolutely terrifying. Yes, only for the brave people.
All right, let's move on. 1 million viewers can't be wrong. What's up with that?
Yes, now we're really happy at Horse and Country because not only did we launch in Australia, as we chatted about last week, but we got some news through that in Great Britain alone, so not including our Irish viewers and all our international channels, we hit 1 million views in the last 3 months of 2014. So really exciting for us.
Wow, congratulations. That's great. You need this. Wait a minute. We've got to give you this. That's a big deal. I mean, people, you know, when you think about the fact that some of your most popular TV shows will not even get 1 million viewers, and they consider that good on cable, that, you know, that's terrific.
It is. I mean, this is across the 3 months, but we've been getting thousands and thousands every day, and it is just really exciting. At a time, you know, when lots of the media is changing and print titles are finding it harder to exist in the current atmosphere, it's great that TV is still doing well and still popular, and it's not that everyone's just watching YouTube instead. So we are really happy.
Well, and it's also great, you know, it's great from the horse world point of view. That means there are non-horse people watching as well. You know, not everybody is watching Dancing with the Stars. So it means...
<That's true. laughs>
I love it.
We've had heard a few viewers that used to ride when they were kids and stumbled across Horse and Country and have started to get back into it again, which is really inspiring for us. And of course, it's not all about horses. We do have things like fishing and farming and dog programs as well. So it attracts some kind of more country fans rather than just the horsey people.
You know, I was just looking at your lineup for today, and it's funny you mentioned that because I was just, you had at 3 o'clock today, you have Fresh from the Farmer's Markets, and I had to go see what that was, and it's just what it sounds like. They go find out where all the stuff at the farmer's markets is grown. So, yeah, you do have some different programming. And then there's fly fishing. So, and you did that one, right? Didn't you go out fly fishing?
No, I haven't been. I haven't been fly fishing for about 10 years, and I was pretty rubbish at it. So, no, it wasn't me.
The only thing I would catch with that, with the fly fishing, I could never do fly fishing because the only thing I would catch is like my ass. I mean, when I went back and I could get the hook stuck, I was one of those fishermen as a kid that my hook was constantly in a tree somewhere. So there's no way I could fly fish. That just looks like too much effort. Chad fishes, doesn't he? Jamie, didn't he fly fish?
He absolutely loves to fly fish.
Really? How does he not get all caught up in the hook? And I just don't get it, how they
Glenn,
keep that straight.
It is a separate question on how successful he is fly fishing. It's just, you ask if he likes it, he doesn't. He likes it.
That's funny. Well, one other story here that we're going to talk about, and this is a kind of sad one, is about some cobs that were stolen. We have that problem over here, and we're covering stolen horses all the time. Apparently you do, too?
We do. I mean, there's lots of horse thefts going on, but what was unusual about this story is they were from a rescue center, so you have to be quite a
they
low...
They stole the horses out of a rescue center?
Yeah, Bransby Horses. It's a welfare center in Lincolnshire here in England, and they were in their padlock, and they're in their paddock, and somebody came along and cut the padlock to the gate, so and stole them. And you never know whether these ponies have been stolen by the original owner, who maybe had the horse taken away from them because they weren't looking after them. You don't know if that's the case, or if it's just, you know, people who want a cob to buy and sell on at market and think that, you know, no, it's not going to be affecting anyone because it's coming from a rescue centre instead of from a private home. But either way, it just really is a distressing story.
Yeah, that is a distressing story. Now, do you have like over here, we have netposse.com, which is a website and a woman who does tremendous work where immediately they get the word out about stolen horses. Does NetPosse operate over there? Or do you have something like it in England?
It doesn't sound familiar. No, I mean, we've got a kind of growing thing called Lost Box on Twitter and Facebook, which are really good about sharing things about stolen and lost items and missing dogs and lost horses and things. So I think that's growing in popularity really quickly.
Interesting. And then, we have been talking about clones a little bit on the show here as stories come up. And you did a video on clones as well, right?
Yeah, so last week we chatted about Cruising, the Irish stallion that's been cloned, and we had the news story about that. But we've now got a video, and so you can actually find out a little bit more about the cloning process and see the two clones and find out which mannerisms they've picked up from the father, Cruising. If you call it father, I don't really know with cloning. It's very confusing. And you get to see them working and moving, and the breeder of the original stallion, who's the person who made the decision to clone cruising, she talks about how she made the decision and how she kept it secret for 2 years. So it's a really, really interesting clip. It's only 10 minutes long, but I really liked watching it this morning.
Terrific. And then one more video of the week, and that was introducing an ex-racer to a ditch fence. Now, I did not get a chance to watch this one, so tell me about it.
I thought Jamie would like this one, but it's featuring Dom Schramm, who's an Australian event rider who's based over in the States, and he is the star of our new series Along for the Ride. And he basically is talking about taking an off-the-track thoroughbred to the cross-country course for the first time. And it's really funny because he talks about how they're so used to kind of their environment being around them being one thing, and then you suddenly take them out into this big open space and their heads just go a bit like, ah! And so you can sort of see the expression on this horse's face that he just is so excited he doesn't quite know what to do with himself. And so Dom talks about how he always likes to jump a ditch during their first cross-country schooling session, and this horse is being asked to walk up and down the ditch and not jump it, but he's still convinced that there's a tiger in the ditch about to jump out and get him. So it's quite sweet to watch.
I think everybody that's trained a off-the-track thoroughbred, Jennifer included, has had that trouble. I remember watching my wife spend an hour at the side of what was probably a 2-foot drop trying to get that thoroughbred to go down that 2-foot drop. She turned out to be a great eventer one day, but I'll never forget that watching Jennifer at that ditch, and she was not going to let that horse off the hook. It finally did it after an hour. But boy, yeah, I and then did it, Jennifer, that horse then did it thereafter, but that first time was a tough one.
It was a minor battle, that first one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anybody that's trained, you know, you have them. You know what that's like.
I do. I've been very lucky. Rosie so far has jumped everything I've asked her cross country, and it's like she hasn't really thought about it very much. So I'm hoping that it stays that way and she just keeps going, oh, okay, I'll do that.
But you'll find something else that's totally weird that she'll be afraid of. It'll be a bunny rabbit. It'll be, you know, a kid's stroller. There'll be something that just sets them off, and it's different for every horse, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, my first two exercise horses were quite sharp and quite spooky, but Rosie so far has been incredibly well-behaved. A children's balloon, I think, is the only thing that's ever really frightened her, and even then she quickly decided it was okay. But the day that I realised that she really is quite a remarkable thoroughbred is when, for some reason, a carpet had been hung over the fence of the arena. So you can imagine a giant carpet covering the entire fence, and if my older X-ray horse had seen that, he wouldn't have even gone into the arena. And Rosie just acted like it wasn't even there and just trotted right past it quite happily. So I'm very lucky. She's a very cool girl.
Well, very good. Thank you so much, Victoria, for joining us once again. It's horseandcountry.tv. And, of course, if you're in Australia now, we have a lot of Australian listeners, you can actually see Horse and Country TV. Just check your lineup to see where it is locally there. And I want to let all our Australian listeners know we're very jealous because you guys have it, we don't. So,
yes, if you want to find out more about the Australian site, the website is horseandcountrytv.com.au. So
From what you said last week, you will have some Australian programming as well. It's not just going to be, you know, transferred what you're doing over there. There will be some geared to Australia. So
we're starting to work on new local programming as well. So it's all very exciting.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Victoria.
My pleasure. Have a good week.
You too. That's Victoria Spicer, and she is with us every Wednesday at 10 o'clock. We appreciate your being here. Well, Jamie had to cut out a bit early today. She had some things she had to get done, so we appreciate her being on earlier in the show. Jennifer's going to help me finish the show out. And Jennifer, we have Really Bad Ads this Friday, and you're going to tell us what the prize is for EquityMFG.com. Really Bad Ads.
This week, a pair of Rider's sleeves. Rider's sleeves are the perfect accessory for the outdoor athlete. These sleeves are the ultimate UV protector and contain a special moisture-radiating material that keeps you cool in hot weather conditions. The antimicrobial fabric won't hold on to odors, and the three-dimensional seamless weave is a super stretchy and super comfortable. Rider's sleeves come in four colors, black, white, pink, yellow, and sky blue, so you'll look as cool as you feel. And you can find Rider's sleeves at your local tack or retail store. I saw them at the tack store we visited down in Wellington. Or you can visit them online at Rider's Sleeves. That's Rider's plural, sleeves plural, .com. I have a set of these in sky blue, and I love them.
She wears them all the time, in the summertime especially, because they're cool, and they keep the bugs off, you know, and the sun, both of them, both bugs and sun. They really do work. And, of course, this week is the week that we give away a EquityMFG.com Flex and Fork. Once a month, at the end of every month, we're going to give away one of those forks. And what we do is take all the people who have submitted really bad ads during the month and put their names in a hat and basically draw it out of a hat and see who wins the Flex and Fork. So you still have 2 days to get your entries in for this month's drawing. And it's not just the winners every week. It's everybody who enters and gets their ad read on the air will be included in the drawing. And we're doing that on Friday. Let's see here. There were a couple news stories, too, that we can cover here real quick. State police are looking for a suspect in another hair getting chopped off of horses story. And this is out of Butler, Pennsylvania, in western Pennsylvania. They had several horses that had their manes and tails cut off. And boy, we haven't had one of these in a while, I don't think we've ever had one out of Pennsylvania. So it just goes to show that wherever you are, this can happen. And it's always just so bizarre. And they actually struck during lunch hour on Wednesday. They did it in broad daylight. Their horses were out in a field along the road, and they just came up, hopped the fence, and cut their hair off. Now,
That's strange.
You know, I know, and when strangers walk up to horses in fields and start chopping their hair off, do you think there's one of them that would finally kick one of these guys?
I mean, I have two questions, because we cover this same topic many, many times each year. A, has anyone ever been prosecuted for this crime? Has anyone ever been caught and prosecuted?
Yeah.
And B, if A is true and someone has been caught and prosecuted, why the you know what do they do it? It just seems so stupid. There's a really, really tiny market for horse hair. Yes, it's expensive. But there are three people in the entire world that make hair extensions for horses.
I know. I don't know.
I don't get it.
Where,
I just don't get
it. Yeah, I know they sell it, and I know they use it for brushes and violin bows and hat bands and stuff like that. But, again, I agree. I don't know. I don't even know where I would go to sell it. I wouldn't have an idea who I'd go to. But apparently they know somebody. Well, and also out of Pennsylvania, this is I think this is a happy story. Penn National Racetrack is one of those lower-level racetracks in Pennsylvania. It was the one that was closest to us when we were growing up. We had been to Penn National many times, but it was a lower-level racetrack. It's not the top of the line. They got a casino in there, and now it's a full casino operation and a racetrack. But they've always had problems with trainers, you know, causing trouble. And I was shocked to see this. A central Pennsylvania horse trainer has been sentenced to 6 months in prison for rigging races by drugging. They apparently have been cracking down at Penn National. This is the second person sentenced in this probe of race fixing. And that's what they're getting him on, is race fixing. They're getting him on gambling violations as opposed to going, you know, because they drugged the horses, as opposed to you know, some of the things where you've heard they've tested for illegal drug use and they try and suspend the trainers and that kind of thing, and it stays within the racing community. This isn't that way. The police have gotten involved, arrested them, and prosecuted them, and this particular person has actually gone to jail for 3 months and a three-month work release after that. But it's one of the first I've seen where they're going to jail for for a basic, simple drugging, and, you know, it's not good to do. I'm not condoning drugging here. I'm just saying that this was kind of shocking that it actually went to that degree.
Interesting take, yeah.
And that Pennsylvania is really looking to prosecute people for that. So if you're at Penn National, you better be careful what you're doing up there. One other thing, too, let me see here. I wanted to mention this before the day was done. Our friend Missy Ranshausen, who is an eventer and has been on our show many times, and she is the coach of the para-equestrian team here in the United States, is down in Ocala like most of the other eventers are, and had an unfortunate thing happen the other day. She has a living quarters trailer, you know, like a big mobile home that she lives in, and it went up in flames the other night at the farm that she was at. There were no humans inside when it caught fire. A working student, her two working students were nearby and able to rescue her dog, which she dearly loves, that was trapped inside. The cause of the fire has not been confirmed. I'm sure it was something electrical. She's working with the fire marshal and her insurance company to determine how the losses will be covered. In the meantime, virtually all of her material possessions were lost in the blaze, from her basic clothing to competition gear, to items that are hard to replace, like logo wear. And she, you know, she's been a member of many of the teams, United States teams, as well as Paralympic, and she lost a lot of her memorabilia for that. This was her home. She lived there, and she lived in this motorhome. And, you know, we've heard about these motorhome fires in the past. Buck Davidson had one that went up also, and he had trouble with. So, you know, she actually has, if you go to eventingnation.com, they have an article there. She's in immediate need of clothing, breeches, boots, and shoes, and things like that. And they have a list of what she could use and where to send it to. So if you want to check that out for our friend Missy, you can head on over to eventingnation.com, and they have an article there. And you can actually see, unfortunately, what also happened is her car, her Subaru car, was parked immediately, like right beside the trailer, and it also went up in flames. And I'm sure this thing was gone hardly before the fire department got there. There's not much left. It's just a shell from the pictures. So that was sad news, but I did want to let everybody know about it. You know, we like Missy, and we like, you know, she's very selfless with what she does for the para riders in the United States. So we wish her the best and hope that she can get on her feet and that the insurance comes through for her. Well, that is about it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with Kim Baker. It's a Kim Baker episode. I don't know what guest she has planned, but I do know that she's going to do a reading of one of our listeners' horses to start the show, like we do every month on the Kim Baker episode, and I know that's very popular. And I'm still hearing from people. If you would like to get a reading done, you can send me an email at glenn@horseradionetwork.com, and we'll add you to the list. It might be a couple months. But we'll definitely put you on the list to get a reading done by Kim. And then Friday, Jamie will be back, and it's Really Bad Ads Day. Now, I did want to make a programming note, too. We have something exciting happening next week. I posted about it on our Facebook page yesterday. We've been invited to come to the Global Pet Expo, which is one of the largest pet expos in the country. And it's happening in Orlando next week. We're going to be heading down, and we're going to be doing the show, Horses in the Morning Show, live from the Global Pet Expo Friday morning. We'll have some guests on, and this time, instead of talking about horse products, we'll be talking dog and cat products, or goats, or guinea pigs, or snakes, or I don't know what else they have at the Global Pet Expo. There's 1,000 exhibitors, almost 3,000 booths, and more than 3,000 new product launches will happen there. And they get about 6,000 buyers that come in from around the world. This is not open to the public. It's for retailers and wholesalers to get together. But we're excited to be there, and we're going to be meeting some other podcasters. They're actually having a podcaster meeting for people who do podcasts about animals. And they invited us to come in and represent the horse community there. So we're excited to meet our fellow podcasters who are in the pet and the pet world, whether it's dogs or cats or chickens or whatever. So it should be a lot of fun, and we're looking forward to coming to you live from there on Friday of next week. Well, that's about it for today. Don't forget our app, iOS or Android. It's free. It's easy. It's the simplest way to listen to the shows. Just go to the App Store and search for Horse Radio Network. Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. Be safe, wear your helmets, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.